You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning to everyone. This fine Tuesday morning, Tuesday, August 1st, the first day of August in 2017, where it's 6 a.m. on the West Coast, 9 a.m. on the East Coast. Grab yourself a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, whatever you might be doing, perhaps sitting around the computer, sitting by your radio, driving, working, whatever. Just thank you so much for joining me for my program. I just want to thank everyone, too. The outpouring of support in terms of spreading the word about the new broadcast, whether it is my show from 9 to 10 or Joe and John Robertson from 2 to 3, to supplement our mainstay program from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time has just been robust. I've gotten emails from all around the world. I just want to say thank you so much. Thanks for spreading the word about our program. Thank you so much for your belief in me, belief in this platform. And thanks so much for caring enough to turn off the television, turn off the mainstream media, and to get into or to research what is really going on out there. And not that we have, not that I've got this lock on everything that's going on with absolute certainty, but I'll tell you something, we get close, and for that, I've been hearing from a lot of people saying, you know what, it's the information you give is really concise and right on the money. So thank you so much for that. And folks, tonight, Tuesday, on our regular program from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Pamela Geller is going to be on our program tonight. Brandon House is going to start us off talking about what happened at the White House, the prayer, the spiritual meetings and such, and who's there, what's going on. And, of course, that's a really interesting dynamic there. It's something we need to pay attention to for a number of reasons. But Brandon House first, and then Pamela Geller is going to join us, and, of course, we're going to wrap it up, Stan Deo. So can't wait for that program tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, the Hagmann Report. And of course, folks, tune into John and Joe's show, the Daily Hagmann Daily Show from 2 to 3 p.m. But all in all, thank you for your support. I want to thank BTR, Bob, and his people there, great people at Blog Talk Radio. They've done just a tremendous job to revolutionize the radio industry, as well as Global Star for carrying my program and John and Joe's. And Todd, you just work so hard. I want to thank you and everyone at Global Star Radio as well. A much deserved thank you. Most importantly, however, thank you, the listeners. Thank you for caring. Thank you for everything that you do. Thanks for mentioning this program to others. It's amazing to me when I go to a town, whether it's Buffalo or Pittsburgh or Cleveland or, I mean, you just name the town, and I just run into people who listen to this broadcast. It's surprising. I remember coming back from a Chicago conference that we did and stopping at a plaza and met two different occasions, actually, this happened. Two different occasions. One, we met people who were at the conference. But on another occasion, I was at the register, and I had a young lady come up to me and say, "Are you Doug Hagmann?" Actually, she said, asked me if I was Joe Hagmann, meaning Doug Hagmann. But yeah, so I was recognized in one of those travel plazas. The reason I mention that is the word is getting out there about the alternative media. And I'm so thankful, not because we're anything special. My goodness, just ask my wife. Just ask her, you know, or just follow me around for a day. You know, I'm the guy carrying the little plastic bag and being walked by Lady, the studio dog, you know, picking up after her. Believe me, nobody special indeed, and I've got no airs that I am. So, but it's nice just to relate to people on a one-on-one basis. But we've got we are very fortunate. We're blessed. I know some people don't like that sentiment or statement that blessed, but we have been blessed by the listenership of the Hagmann Report in our new programs now, which are a week old. And the numbers are robust, the listening audience is robust. So please, I ask you this, a couple of things. Please spread the word about our new program. Go to HagmannReport.com. There on the right, you'll see the options to listen. It's a pretty large graphic there. And it, just click on the graphic. It'll take you to all of the listening options. And just pick whatever your favorite might be. And then, of course, please know that we are partnered up with WorldNet Daily, WND Superstore. There's a big banner on the top of our website, HagmannReport.com, and I want to thank Eric the Tech for taking care of that. Click on that. Anything that you buy at WND Superstore, use the promo code Hagmann. And, of course, we get credit, and it's a mutually beneficial arrangement. WorldNet Daily's got some fantastic, and I mean some fantastic writers, authors, researchers. I mean, consider Alicia Powell, for example. Oh, my goodness, does she just strike at the heart of things. And a few more requests before we get really down into the nitty-gritty. Please follow me on my Twitter. The reason I say that, well, my Twitter handle is at HagmannPI. Kind of like Magnum PI, but it's HagmannPI. And also on Facebook, Douglas.Hagmann. Now, that's separate from our Hagmann Report because there are some views I have that really, it's good to keep things separate, all right? Because the Hagmann Report, it's autonomous. It's a standalone organization. Of course, follow Hagmann Report on Twitter and Facebook as well. All of our people that have personal accounts. But by doing so, it gets the word out there. It spreads the word. Now, you'll know yesterday I had part one about the Owen brothers and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC. I'm going to hold off on part two because I've got some information. From yesterday's program, I received a communication from someone who is going to be providing me with some information I believe that is far and beyond anything that exists out there in the open source. And I'll be taking care of that here in the next 24 hours. But I want to draw your attention to a July 29th, 2017 article, speaking of the Owen brothers and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC. I want to draw your attention to a July 29th, 2017 article. Now it's, 3 days old now, by Andrew McCarthy, National Review. Now, the venue, I'm not really crazy about, given all the facts that are given the fact that they are really an anti-Trump website. But Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor. This is a guy I can relate to. The title of the article that he had written, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Pakistani IT Scammers. This is what it's all about. It's that sentence right there, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Pakistani IT Scammers. I believe when you look at the situation, front and center in this is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And her role in this is extremely important. Now, I'm going to cite this article, and then I'm going to play a clip here momentarily that will take us one step back and talk about the entirety of the corruption. But with respect to the article by Andrew McCarthy, he talks about there's more than bank fraud going on here. And he writes that in Washington, it's never about what they tell you it's about. And that goes back to my saying, it's never about the spoon, okay? And I'm not going to get into that, but it's kind of an inside joke. And in fact, it's an allusion to an episode of Everyone Loves Raymond, but it's never about the spoon. It's never about what they tell you it's about. So he writes, so take this to the bank. The case of Imran Awan, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's mysterious Pakistani IT guy, it's not about the bank fraud. Yet bank fraud is the stated charge, on which Owen was arrested at Dulles Airport last week. And just as he was trying to leave the United States for Pakistan via Qatar. Now, this same route was taken by Hina Alvi, Owen's wife, back in March, when she just suddenly up and packed her bags and left the country with her three young daughters and yanked them out of school. And she was caught with $12,400 in cash. Now, about that, you've got to fill out currency export papers when you take more than $10,000 out of the country. Otherwise, you can be charged. They didn't charge her. Anyway, I digress. And why not? But by then, in terms of the bank fraud, the proceeds of the fraudulent $165,000 loan that they had gotten from the Congressional Federal Credit Union had already been sent to Pakistan. Now, this is what the mainstream media will lead off with, or will talk about. They're going to talk only about the very limited nature of the fraudulent bank loan. That's it. That was part, of course, of a $283,000 transfer that Owen sent from Capitol Hill to Pakistan. Now, you kind of wonder about this whole thing, whether at what point did the light bulbs go off in these people's heads? Because according to the documents, and I downloaded the documents and I went through them, and McCarthy references them, Imran Awan actually pulled off and I don't know how he did it. He pretended to be his wife in a phone call with a credit union. Now, the reason for the transfer were allegedly for funeral arrangements, right? Okay, yeah, that didn't fly. Then, kind of like that John Lovitz character, you know, no, that's the ticket. That's not, you know, she was buying property. Well, without asking any further questions, the credit union wired the money, yeah, to Pakistan. Now, you have to wonder for a moment how that even is possible. You've got the Capital Federal Credit Union wiring money to Pakistan. Now, these are the people, again, who this cadre of criminals, of people who are, I believe, are involved in much more nefarious things than just the money. It's never about the spoon. It's never about the money. It's never about what they say it's about. But they have been collecting and had access for more than a decade to the emails. Again, I've said this before, but I'm going to pound this home. Emails and other electronic files of members of the House Intelligence and Foreign Affairs Committees, Homeland Securities Committee, three high-level committees, over 80 different congressional members of Congress. And they, as it turns out, they were actually transferring files to remote servers, much like, and apparently they took a page out of the playbook of Hillary Clinton. Much like Hillary Clinton. At the time of the arrest, and allow me just to really drive this home, the mainstream media, Fox News is picking up on this, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Lou Dobbs, and others who I have got just an incredible amount of respect for. But most are focused on the money aspect of this. Now, at the time, last week of his arrest, Imran Awan had been working for the Democrats since 2004. Again, first hired by Robert Wexler, and then 2005, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz has had a 12-year, almost 12-year relationship with Imran Awan and the Awan family. He started out at, in between there as well. Gregory Meeks was involved now back in 2004, but Wexler, Meeks, and then for a period, and then, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz to bring it home. And back then, of course, Wasserman Schultz was just elected to the House. Now, McCarthy talks about the congressional staff salaries, which are modest, $40,000, $50,000 or so range. Well, and we had mentioned this as well, the Iwans were paid four times that, five times that in some cases. He managed to get his wife, Hina Alvey, on the House payroll, then his brother, Abid Iwan, then Abid's wife, and on and on and on. The youngest of the brothers, Jamal, came on board in 2014. You know, he was 20 years old. Imagine that, 20 years old. So how much did they pay him? $160,000. So we also know, in addition to their IT jobs, they were involved in a number of other enterprises, businesses. They owned homes, present tense. The CARS International A, interesting acronym of CIA. A lot of these, as, and I cite again George Webb and other investigative journalists out there, that a lot of these appear to be CIA proprietaries, front companies. So is it possible that we have high-level or CIA involvement here? I believe we do at some level, but I don't agree with the analysis, the open-source analysis. In some, I don't agree with 100% of what George Webb says. And however, I agree with a lot based on his research. I don't agree with some of the findings, for example. But I also think that he's damn close. Now, the other part of this as well that no one is talking about, that I do believe you're going to see the overlap into human trafficking, because with the organizations, the businesses started by the Iwans, you're looking at the ability to ship product, when that product could be drugs, it could be humans, children and adult trafficking victims. But this is taking place, and I suspect we're going to see, if you dig deep enough, far enough, wide enough, you're going to see the overlap into this. But at the head of all of this, of course, is Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who, as I stated yesterday, appears to be a little bit, perhaps maybe she might be having to double up on her Xanax. By the way, I did send her a Twitter message to that effect, and I also referenced her threat to the Capitol, chief of the Capitol Police, about there will be consequences. And I, yes, Debbie, there will be consequences. I do know that that message did get to her. And I do know that I am now firmly on her radar. That's right. What an honor. But anyway, with respect to the biggest criminal enterprise scandal, is not even a good word for this, but it's a criminal enterprise. It is treasonous in my view. It is seditious. I mean, we're talking about espionage. We're talking about treason here. The Iwans, as I had mentioned, $5 million from 2009 to 2016, early 2017. That's how much collectively they earned in salaries. And the reason, as I stated, is you cannot earn more. If you're working for the House, you can't work more than the House member. So what do? You bring in others. They're called no-show employees. They never show up. They're just put on the payroll. And, of course, they benefit from that income. But the question that Andrew McCarthy poses is, why are they paid? Why were they paid, and are they paid so much for doing so little? And the question I would add to that is, why did Debbie Wasserman Schultz insist on keeping Imran Awan on her payroll, even after the Capitol Police said, no, they're under investigation, they're out of here? That was February 2nd, 2017. But yet she continued to keep Imran Awan on her payroll and retitling him as an advisor. Why? Why? And why were they paid so much for doing so little? That is the question posed by McCarthy. And you have to give him, you have to understand where he's coming from, former federal prosecutor. This man knows how to prosecute a case. But that's a side issue, and I agree with him on this. A more pressing question is, why were they given access to highly sensitive government information? Now, ordinarily, McCarthy states, that requires a security clearance, awarded only after a background check that looks for ties for to foreign countries, for associations with unsavory people, and the vulnerability to blackmail. These people would not have qualified. Never, ever. Forget the access. It's just hard to even understand how they retained their jobs. The websites, Daily Caller, Gateway Pundit, have done a tremendous job. Hats off to those entities. Investigative job on their investigations. But the Daily Caller discovered that the family, they control several properties. Actually, George Webb referenced this earlier. They were involved in the various suspicious mortgage transfers. Abid, while working full-time in Congress, he was the guy behind Carr's International CIA. Never really at the house. He was running the business, through which he was accused, by the way, of stealing money and merchandise. In 2012, he discharged his debts in bankruptcy. This is Abid now. And it was $1.1 million. While being able to still somehow keep his real estate holdings, congressional Democrats hired Abid despite his flurry spate list of drunk driving convictions just a month before he started at the House. I mean, that's how close to the hiring it was. And they kept him on despite his public drunkenness arrest a month after that. And Imran Awan had misdemeanor charges of driving without a license, or on a suspended license, I should say, driving an unregistered vehicle. I think 19 violations he accumulated. But the big story here, and really the major story, is the access to the information, the fact that they had an off-site server, and the fact that involved in their procurement scheme was the fact that they were taking equipment from the congressional offices, reselling it, or otherwise getting it back to the congressional offices. But I suspect, as do others, that this hardware was... Somebody better take a look at the hardware, because I do believe there are back doors built in here, and as well as the software that runs the hardware. But it's interesting because in March of last year, the House Intelligence Committee Democrats wanted the Awans to have just unfettered access to all of the information, which they arguably already had. But March 22nd, 2016, they wrote a letter to the Appropriations Subcommittee. Now, that's the Debbie Wasserman Schultz's committee. Seeking funding so the staffers could obtain top secret SCI clearances. That's the highest level security classification there is. And they were, well, that's just a very odd request. And the Democratic members, they would not, and this is by Andrew McCarthy, they would not make such a request without coordination leadership, or coordination with leadership, that is. The ranking member on the Appropriations Subcommittee, the man or the woman who threatened the Capitol police chief with consequences in the context of the Appropriations Committee, and to whom the letter was addressed that I just referenced, was Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now, one would ask, and Andrew McCarthy asked this, why is this investigation taking so long? Why so little enforcement action until he was really arrested at Dulles, finally going to leave flee the country? Why was and is, why does Debbie Wasserman Schultz, again, who knows me now more than she did before, obviously, but why were they so accommodating to Imran? Was she so accommodating to Imran Awan and the Awan family? There's something much deeper here than just the money. When you hear the money talked about on the mainstream media, think deeper. And you know, this investigation began in late 2016. And I would call your attention to Donald Trump's presidency, his election, I should say. Understand that we have to look at what we're seeing in the context of a Donald Trump victory at the voting booth, and his installation as president of the United States. From the day that, from election day, the day after, until his inauguration, you have to understand Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Loretta Lynch, James Comey, and others, the deep state embedded in John Brennan, they were all engaged in activity that was designed to set traps for, at least in my view, Donald Trump and his staff. The unmasking by Susan Rice, the unmasking by John Brennan, and at the direction of Obama and others that I'm going to be really getting into in later programs, that is perhaps one of the most another important aspect, one of the most important components of this as well. This gave that action gave the aides, the staffers. Maybe the staffers is a wrong term, but the aides working for the elected officials, the appointed people, gave them more freedom and more access to do a lot of damage. And it was all at the direction of Barack Obama. Because when his lady, Hillary Rodham Clinton, I won't use that term, when Clinton didn't get in, Barack Hussein Obama began salting the earth. Now, I'm going to go back to Andrew McCarthy's article here, because he does mention one thing that's important to that really is important to point out. You go back to late 2016, right around the time of Election Day, the Awans, they knew they were under investigation. They started arranging the fraudulent credit union loan in December. The $283,000 wire transfer occurred on January 18th. In early February, House Security Services informed representatives that the Awans were suspects in a criminal investigation. Now, it was during this time when investigators found stolen equipment stashed in the Rayburn House office building. I mentioned this during the program yesterday. I want to just keep driving this point home, because that included a laptop that appears to belong to Wasserman Schultz and that Imran was using, which she referenced as his. Shared ownership or shared use, his, hers, whatever. They both had access to it, equal access to it. But note that there's reference to more than one item here. stolen equipment stashed in the Rayburn office building, including a laptop. So the laptop was not the only item, but that was certainly one of the items that was that Wasserman Schultz wanted back and threatened to get back. Although the Awans were banned, barred from the computer network, the Capitol computer network, not only did Debbie Wasserman Schultz keep Imran on her staff for several additional months, but Gregory Meeks, he retained Hina Alvi until February 28th, just 5 days before she just took off for Lahore, Pakistan. You got to look at these congressmen, and there's something here. Either there's 100% collusion with the Awans, or there is blackmail. Many people have their own pet theory. We're still looking at this and analyzing this. But on March 5th, the FBI, along with the Capitol Police, went to Dulles Airport. They stopped Hina Alvi before she left to go to Lahore, Pakistan. That's when they discovered that she was carrying $12,400 in cash. Yeah, I do that too. You know, it's just easier that way, right? And as has been pointed out, it's a felony. Read my lips. It's a felony to export more than $10,000 in currency from the United States without filing a currency transportation report. Was she charged with that? No. Was she arrested for that? No. She never filed one of those papers. Now, if her name would be Martha Stewart or your name, yeah, you'd be talking or listening behind bars. You'd be behind bars. Alvi did not file one. And in connection with her husband's arrest, this last week, the FBI submitted to the court a complaint affidavit, which I've downloaded and have, and I looked at. It describes Hina Alvi's flight, but makes no mention of a currency transportation report. But she was permitted to board the plane anyhow, leave the country. Now, they knew, and I better point this out, they knew, of course, that she had absolutely no intention of returning to the United States. She took the money. She took the children. And she was leaving for Pakistan. No intention of returning. Although said, hey, I'm going to come back in September. No, you're not. So many congressional staffers are convinced they'd long ago have been in handcuffs had they pulled what the Awans did, or even suspected of. But no arrests were made until Imran Awan. And this scandal really came to light in February. But for months, and Andrew McCarthy points this out, the Imran Awan just sauntering around the Capitol. In the interim, Wasserman Schultz has been obstructing justice. You talk about obstruction of justice. Here it is. Debbie Wasserman Schultz should be the poster child for obstruction of justice, along with Hillary Clinton. We should take a group picture. But she's been fighting investigators all the way. She's demanding the return of her laptop, invoking a constitutional privilege under the speech and debate clause to impede agents from searching it, threatening the Capitol Police with consequences, as I mentioned earlier, if they don't relent. Well, finally, she said, okay, you can scan the laptop, here, do your thing, go ahead and investigate. But her tenacity in this is just incredible. And isn't it interesting that none of the Democrats, progressives for whom Awans worked, have expressed alarm? Instead, they've shouted Islamophobia. Oh, it's all about Islam, and it's just ridiculous to think that's what we're talking about here, especially in terms of especially in terms of something of this magnitude. Now, the communications equipment and everything that's taken place over the last decade and 2 years needs to be really looked at. And we really need to talk to people about the bigger picture here. It's not about the money, not just about the money. It's about the bigger picture. It's the huge picture. And speaking of that, it was on 26th of July. Representative Stephen King had testified before the House Judiciary Committee. And I'm going to play a clip. I'm going to play the clip as to what he said. This is a five-minute clip. He best summarizes this in this clip. Please listen to this. This is an incredible, incredible summation by Representative Stephen King. Here it is. Go ahead and play roll clip one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listening to this debate, it strikes me that there's a few things that have been left out of this discussion, and I do support the gentleman from Florida's amendment, and I follow the ideology of this and the process. One of the things I would say to that is that as I listened to the gentleman from Tennessee address this subject matter and raise his voice pretty strongly about the allegations of Obama versus Russians versus Putin, I would make a couple of points on this. One is, it's pretty clear that the Obama administration sent their people over to Israel to work against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Pretty much openly, significant dollars invested in that campaign over there. The President of the United States, with at least the moral support of the people that had worked for him in the country of Israel, seeking to shift the results of the election against the seated Prime Minister, Bibi Netanyahu. Then the gentleman, I won't yield. I have a lot of things I must say, but thank you. Then the gentleman did object to U.S. tax dollars being used. I just came back not that long ago from the Balkans, where I sat in a place like Macedonia, and there I learned that the United States government, borrowing money from China and Saudi Arabia, had handed over somewhere at least $5 million in contracts transferred through USAID into George Soros organizations that were used to manipulate elections in the Balkans. And that's just particularly Macedonia, not including the neighboring countries that are there. And some of that money was used to translate Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals into Macedonians to distribute the books, and the Rules for Radicals and the actions of radicals were manifested within the election efforts in that part of the world. So I would say that the Obama administration is a long ways from clean on this as far as being involved in elections in other countries, not to mention little comments like the British, if you vote Brexit, you're going to have to go to the back of the queue. So that's a taxpayer dollars piece of this. But the long string that we should be looking at with this investigation and special counsel that is our request here, it goes a long ways back. It goes clear back to Huma Abedin, Anthony Weiner, 650,000 emails, which we still have access to. And the question that was answered to us by James Comey, which is, there was nothing to see there. We did a fast software search of 650,000 emails, and in the case of Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner sharing laptop and sharing emails, there was nothing new in 650,000 emails. And what we've done in this Congress so far is just taken his word for that. Now, it seemed fairly logical to take his word at the time until you examine the investigation that he conducted of Hillary Clinton. Oh, by the way, it was a matter. The investigation that had Cheryl Mills, her chief of staff, as her chief counsel in the room with Hillary Clinton, and both of them had a plea bargain of some kind. They were exempted from prosecution for some by limited terms. But in any case, when you have this chief of staff who's a subject of investigation too, there as counsel to the person who is the subject of the investigation, and we ask under oath, and I ask these questions of Comey or of Loretta Lynch and Comey under oath, and that is, where's the copy of the transcript? Where's the audio files? Where's the video files? Who was in the room? We don't have the answers to any of that except no. If there were notes taken, we don't know whose they are or where they are. If there was any transcript, of the deposition, then that doesn't exist either. Neither do the tapes of either audio or video. This is what looks like on its face is a sham investigation. Plus, they destroyed a tremendous amount of information, at least 30,000 emails, crushed hard drives, bought bleach bit, hired outside contractors to scrub the emails up, and were to take James Comey's word for this, that there wasn't enough substance there to bring a prosecution, even though on a year ago, July 5th, James Comey delivered 15 minutes of the summary of a prosecution that was completely convincing to me, until they got down to the last couple sentences of that presentation, which is, well, we can't prove intent. Well, curiously, there's no requirement for intent in the two statutes that appear to have been violated. And furthermore, I look back in the records to the previous October and the previous April, Barack Obama stated into the news media record, he said Hillary Clinton would never intend to put our national security at risk. Hillary Clinton would never intend to harm America's security. That's October and April, the previous October and April. Well, James Comey latched onto that word intend, and they made up new law and gave Hillary Clinton an exemption for this lack of intent that they said they couldn't prove, which is absolutely proven by the facts that he delivered to us in the summary that day and that there is evidence for. And I would go on. Not only does this trail lead through Hillary Clinton and James Comey, but the Loretta Lynch component of this as well. When you put this in place and you look at the example of them on the tarmac, it's hard to imagine they sat there for 38 minutes and discussed grandchildren. I think that might even be singular, grandchild at the time. We should check that. But the answers that we got from Loretta Lynch were far less than satisfying. And then that brings me to Alexandra Chalupa, who went off as she's a DNC contractor that went off over to Ukraine to try to gather dirt on the Trump people. So bringing this around, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude it with this as my time will soon run out, and that is this, that the trail leads, I believe, also to Barack Obama. We need to investigate all of this.
Now that is an incredible clip, I believe. That's an incredible speech by Representative Stephen King. I think that says it all. That gives the American people the scope of the criminality. It lays it right at the foot or at the feet of Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Clapper, John Brennan, Loretta Lynch. This is where, in my estimation, this is where we need to conduct the investigation. Reaching over for my notes, I mentioned last week when this came out, the Congress of the United States, House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, wrote a multiple-page letter addressed to Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, and Rod Rosenstein. I'd mentioned this, now people are beginning to talk about this as well. I know that this is on Fox News, and I'd ticked off or name detailed the various points here, but there's a request to get a secondary. The request is this: the House Judiciary Committee want a second special counsel appointed to investigate, and I quote, a plethora of matters connected to the 2016 election and its aftermath, including actions taken by previously public figures like Attorney General Loretta Lynch, FBI Director James Comey, and Hillary Clinton, of course, former Secretary of State. And I had, in previous broadcasts, I had referenced the, what is it, 14, I'm looking right here at this letter. 14, let me make sure there's not another one here, 14 points that they want investigated. And I'm not going to go through them. I will be writing about this, but this is, at the very least, needed. I do believe that we need, or a federal grand jury needs to be impaneled. All of these individuals need to be brought before a federal grand jury. We need not just a special prosecutor or an independent prosecutor, but we need complete closure. You know, when there's a crime committed against a murder, we'll say against your family, the families are looking for closure. Americans, most law-abiding Americans are looking for closure, justice and closure. It's not, well, you know, it's that this is yesterday's news. Let's move on. That's not the case. We are asking, and I think every American is, we're asking for justice, equal justice. We're asking for answers. And soon, I suspect, those requests are going to turn into demands, the level of which we have not seen before. And we want the responsible parties that have sold this country down the river taken and justice meted out to these people. And I think that it's only fair. And at the and of course, at the epicenter is the Clinton family, the Clinton crime family, the Clinton Foundation. And that does include Chelsea Clinton, by the way. She does not get a pass at all. But and everyone surrounding the Clintons, everyone surrounding and including Obama. Did you, in that clip that I played, did you hear the reference to Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, George Soros funding? How relevant is that? I mean, look at what is taking place in this country. And we are exporting that now. And we have been, of course. But so critical to understand the depth and the width of the treasonous activity that has been taking place. I met someone this past weekend who I have not seen in maybe 12, 14, 15 years. And he looked at me in conversation, said, "Well, you're the conspiracy theorist." This was, we're talking about a specific matter. And I know what he meant. And I looked at him, and I was taken aback for a minute. But I said, No, I'm an analyst. I'm an investigator. I go where the facts lead me. If the facts point to a conspiracy, then that's where I go. I was pretty, I pushed back pretty hard given the, given our friendship or acquaintanceship, whatever you want to call it. But this, none of this is a conspiracy theory, the pejorative term coined way back when. No, none of this is a conspiracy theory. These are facts. Now, relating to the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Awans, and others, there's something that flew under the radar last week, and I want to cite this because I think this is extremely important that people know about this report. There was a memo about a week and a half ago, July 24th, that was created by a group of former U.S. intelligence officers. Have you heard about this? This is cited in an article titled "Intel Vets Challenge Russia Hack Evidence." Now, again, this is dated July 24th. The subject was the, quote, "Russian hack, an inside job," end quote. There were some forensic studies of the Russian hacking into the DNC committee's computers that was conducted last year that reveal that on July 5th, 2016, data was leaked. It wasn't hacked. It was leaked by a person with physical access to DNC computers. Now, remember I had mentioned at the beginning of the program how the Awan brothers and previous programs, how the Awan brothers, the Awan situation, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC, and in previous programs, the murder of Seth Rich, they all overlap. And those who are fighting the hardest against the Seth Rich murder narrative, murdered because of something he witnessed or did relative to the DNC, those people who are pushing back on that, I believe, are either woefully naive or complicit. But Listen to this. This group of intelligence experts analyzed the metadata from the Guccifer 2.0 files, the Guccifer 2.0 July 5th, 2016 intrusion into the DNC server. Now, these independent cyber investigators, the forensic examiners, have concluded that someone on the inside of the DNC, they copied the DNC data onto external storage devices or external storage device. Think, for example, a portable hard drive or more precisely like a thumb drive. And the telltale signs were implicating Russia were then inserted. Remember the Vault 7 leaks? They talked about misdirected attribution. This is exactly what they did, and this is what they found. In fact, key among these findings of independent forensic investigations is the conclusion that the DNC data was copied at a speed that far exceeds an internet capacity for a remote hack. Of equal importance, the forensics show that the copying and doctoring, the way they misdirected attribution, were performed on the East Coast of the United States. Huh. Relevant? Absolutely. Thus far, the corporate media have ignored all of this and instead adhere to, they've got this death grip on the Russian narrative. Now, this report cites independent analyst Skip Folden. He's a retired IBM program manager for Information Technology US, who examined the recent forensic findings. He's the co-author of the memorandum I reference. He drafted a more detailed technical report that serves as the basis for this memo to President Donald Trump. The recent, recent forensic studies are important because they do address this critical gap of information. Why the FBI neglected to perform any independent forensics on the original 2.0, Guccifer 2.0 material remains a mystery. Why didn't they do any independent forensic analysis on the original Guccifer 2.0 material? Another mystery, the lack of any sign that the handpicked analyst from the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, who wrote the intelligence community assessment dated January 6, 2017, gave any attention to forensics. None. They note that there has been so much conflation of charges about hacking that they want to make it really clear that the primary focus of that memorandum to the president, that distinction must be made. They focus specifically on the July 5th, 2016 alleged Guccifer 2.0 hack of the DNC server. Now, they had crafted earlier memoranda where they addressed the lack of evidence connecting the Guccifer 2.0 alleged hacks and WikiLeaks. And they even asked President, at that time, Obama, specifically to disclose any evidence that WikiLeaks received DNC data from the Russians. Crickets. Nothing. Now, one thing that was rather interesting in this, as I looked through this, addressing that point about asking Obama to disclose any evidence between WikiLeaks or that WikiLeaks received DNC data from the Russians, addressing that point at his last final January 18th press conference, he described the conclusions of the intelligence community as not conclusive, even though the intelligence community assessment of January 6th, a number of days prior, expressed high confidence that Russian intelligence relayed material it acquired from the DNC to WikiLeaks. Well, the phrase, not conclusive, that's important. It's been very clear, and it should be very clear to every American and every individual with working brain cells and synapses. That the reason the United States government lacks conclusive evidence, regardless of how many times Rachel Maddow is going to say that they've got it, it's just saying it doesn't make it so, but that the reason the U.S. government lacks conclusive evidence of a transfer of a Russian hack to WikiLeaks is because there was no such transfer, based mostly on the cumulatively unique technical experience of their ex-NSA colleagues. These people are ex-NSA guys and women. I mean, these are, you don't want these people looking in, you know, if you got something to hide, you don't want these people looking at your computers. They've been saying for nearly a year that the DNC data reached WikiLeaks via copy leaked by a DNC insider. That was on July 5th. Remember, July 10th, Seth Rich murdered. And then what happened after that? WikiLeaks then published the DNC emails. So, an inside leak to WikiLeaks before Julian Assange announced on June 12, 2016, that he had DNC documents and planned to publish them, which he did on July 22nd, 12 days after the murder of Seth Rich, the presumed objective being to expose strong DNC bias toward the Clinton candidacy by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And there was a separate leak on July 5th of 2016 to preemptively taint anything that WikiLeaks might later publish by showing that it came from a Russian hack. All that said, the narrative has been set up. I would urge you to go back and listen to, oh, you know what? I'm going to have to redo that. I spoke about Fusion GPS. I spoke about the opposition research. I named some names. Didn't quite come out. As a matter of fact, it was painful to listen to. When I say it didn't come out, there were technical issues. I'm going to be coming out with a very special expose about Fusion GPS and about the different opposition research groups, how they fit in, how everything fits in to what we're seeing take place today. And it is so important to know who the enemy is, or who we're fighting against, because one more time, it's never about the spoon. As you hear, and you will hear gradually, slowly, painfully slow, the Awan Debbie Wasserman Schultz criminality, you'll hear it start to gain some momentum. But it's going to be misdirected into the money. It was a procurement scam. It was just this theft of money. It was not about that. This exposing the Seth Rich homicide, exposing the Awan brothers, the infiltration into the DNC, and the Clinton Foundation. All of this combined, once exposed, will reveal, in my view, the depth and breadth of criminality that has existed within our government for decades, most specifically for the last 12 years, and certainly even more specifically under the Clintons, that's Bill and Hillary, the Clinton Foundation, the DNC, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz, including and especially Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and their foot soldiers, her foot soldiers, as well as collectively others, the Awans and the people in their association. Once exposed, this will make Watergate look like a Sunday picnic. This will involve rat lines, human trafficking, sex trafficking, organ harvesting, as crazy as that sounds, drugs, drug rat lines, weapons, and cash. This is what this is all about. Folks, have a great day today. Have a great Tuesday. Take the dog for a walk. Have a second cup of coffee on me. But just have a great day. Stop and smell the roses. Say a prayer. Thank God for all of the blessings which he's bestowed upon us. And let's gather together so we can fight another day. Let's keep fighting. Tell others about this program. Tell others about our expansion. and join us tonight. God bless.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.